You may remember perhaps in Luke the 18th chapter that Jesus told of an unjust judge. And a widow had come to the judge and she was seeking relief, and the judge basically was writing her off. But he finally observed that since the woman continued to come, he would go ahead and rule on her case. In verse 6, the Lord said, "Hear what the unjust judge saith. And shall not God avenge his own elect, which cry day and night unto him, though he bear long with them? I tell you that he will avenge them speedily." It's also translated suddenly. "Nevertheless, when the Son of Man cometh, shall he find faith on the earth?" What Jesus is saying is that sometimes we have to be patient with the Lord. The Lord will bring judgment and justice to those that would oppress. But will we get tired of waiting, and will we give up when the Son of Man comes? Will he find faith on the earth? That's really partly, I think for the most part, what Psalm 37 is all about. It is a psalm of encouragement that tells us that trusting God is the antidote to envy. And that's what David is saying here in Psalm 37, that he is envying, or that it is tempting to be envious of the wicked. Envy in reality is a grievous offense against God, because envy is looking at self. It's thinking about what I want and not about what God has promised. We can see the fruits of envy in biblical characters. Think about Cain, and we think about Ahab, and we think about Saul, and we think about Haman. All of these people were envious, and it led to great problems and a lot of heartache. And so here in Psalm 37, God is reassuring people that are troubled by the frequent prosperity of the wicked that retribution, judgment, will come to them. In Psalm 37, David goes back and forth and back and forth and back and forth, repeating some of the same things over and over again. So we're not going to read it from verse 1 all the way to what is the last verse, verse 40. But what we're going to do is look at this psalm under four major headings and see what he says about these issues, these four major issues throughout the psalm. The first, prosperity of the wicked. He said, "Fret not thyself because of evildoers, neither be thou envious against the workers of iniquity, for they shall soon be cut down like the grass and wither as the green herb." Then look at verses 7 through 11. "Rest in the Lord and wait patiently for him. Fret not thyself because of him who prospereth in his way, because of the man who bringeth wicked devices to pass. Cease from anger and forsake wrath. Fret not thyself in any wise to do evil. For evildoers shall be cut off, but those that wait upon the Lord, they shall inherit the earth. For yet a little while, and the wicked shall not be. Yea, thou shalt diligently consider his place, and it shall not be. But the meek shall inherit the earth, and shall delight themselves in the abundance of peace." So the problem here in the beginning is the prosperity of the wicked. We're trying to do what's right. The wicked are stealing, they're plotting, they're doing all of these things to take what they can, and they are wealthy. And it seems that they have no problems. Many of the Psalms deal with that issue because it is a real issue. It was an issue then, and it's an issue now. When Christians doing the very best that they can and trying to do what's right look around and see that others who don't care and that are cheating and that are stealing and doing things the wrong way, breaking the laws, that they seem to be wealthy, that everything seems to be going well for them. David is telling us not to fret about those things, but he had problems with it too. Look at Psalm 73. Psalm 73 and verse 3, David said, the same one who is telling us here, do not fret about this. He said, "I was envious at the foolish when I saw the prosperity of the wicked. For there are no bands in their death, but their strength is firm. They're not in trouble as other men, neither plagued like other men. Therefore pride compasseth them about as a chain. Violence covereth them as a garment. Their eyes stand out with fatness. They have more than heart could wish. They are corrupt and speak wickedly concerning oppression. They speak loftily." He goes on and on and on saying, "And I envy them." But then drop all the way down to verse 16. When I thought to know this, it was too painful for me. Until I went into the sanctuary of God, then understood I their end. David said, you know what? I was jealous of the wicked for a time too. I struggled with that until I thought about what's going to happen when God judges them. And that God is going to judge them. So now in Psalm 37, he's telling us, don't fret about those things. Don't worry about it. Frustration and bitterness, about which we read in verse 8 there, it leads us to want to imitate the wicked, and the end is not good. Two wrongs never make a right, and it doesn't here. In verse 9, he mentions that the new heavens and the new earth are inheriting the earth, and we study that from Matthew 5 from the Beatitudes. In 2 Peter 3 and verse 13 and Matthew 5 and verse 12, we also read in the both places that our inheritance is in heaven. The new heavens and the new earth and the New Testament, that word new, kainos, means new in kind, means different totally. It is a new place that God is preparing, and it is used synonymously and interchangeably with heaven. And Peter says specifically, and so does Jesus, that our inheritance is in heaven. So number one, then, we see the prosperity of the wicked. But then look at number two, the plotting of the wicked. Look at verse 12. David says, the wicked plotteth against the just and gnasheth upon him with his teeth. Then look at verse 32. The wicked watcheth the righteous and seeketh to slay him. So the wicked is not only jealous and angry, but seeking to do harm. If you go back to Judges chapters 8 and chapter 9, there was a man there by the name of Jerubbaal. A lot of people know him better as Gideon because both names were applied to him. Judges chapter 8 verses 1 and 2 and following. In chapter 9, we read that when Gideon died, that Abimelech killed all of the other children of Gideon except one, and that was Jotham. We remember reading about Jotham's fable. It's the only fable in the Bible. But Jotham was the only one that escaped. And yet we look at Abimelech and the fact that he was plotting to kill all of the other brothers when he went to his people and tried to reason with them and get them to pay him to do this very thing. Peter and John in Acts chapter 4, they were threatened. They were put in prison for preaching the gospel. Paul and Silas were put in prison in Philippi, Acts chapter 16. More than 40 men had bound themselves under an oath to kill the Apostle Paul, and they had bound themselves under that oath, and as a part of that oath, that they would not eat or drink until Paul was killed. Well, Paul wasn't killed. I wonder if they kept their oath. I rather doubt it. That's Acts 23 and verse 21. The Jews plotted to kill Jesus. They sought false witnesses. They did see the crucifixion of Jesus. So here were the wicked that were wanting to destroy, that were wanting to kill the righteous. In Matthew chapter 10, remember what Jesus said to his disciples as he warned them? He said, beginning at verse 17, but beware of men, for they will deliver you up to the councils, and they will scourge you in the synagogues. And you shall be brought before governors and kings for my sake, for a testimony against them and the Gentiles. But when they deliver you up, take no thought how or what you shall speak, for it shall be given you in that hour what ye shall speak. Jesus tells them, the people are going to hate them. People are going to plot against them. When we go back to Psalm 37, that's basically what we're finding here. That wicked men hate the righteous because the righteous are a hindrance to their evil deeds. And wicked people have no conscience. There is nothing they will do, nothing that will stop them from trying to destroy the righteous. We see that in our world today, sadly. So we have the prosperity of the wicked and the plotting of the wicked. But what about the peril of the wicked? That's my favorite part. And I'm sure it was for David as well. That's going to be verses 13 through 17, verses 20 through 22, 35 through 36, and verse 38. Let's just look at them individually. Verse 13. The Lord shall laugh at him, for he seeth that his day is coming. The wicked have drawn out the sword and have bent their bow to cast down the poor and needy and to slay such as be of upright conversation. Their sword shall enter into their own heart, and their bows shall be broken. A little that a righteous man hath is better than the riches of many wicked. For the arms of the wicked shall be broken, but the Lord upholdeth the righteous. Look at verse 20. But the wicked shall perish, and the enemies of the Lord shall be as the fat of lambs. They shall consume into smoke, and they shall consume away. The wicked borroweth and payeth not again, but the righteous showeth mercy and giveth. For such as be blessed of him shall inherit the earth, and they that be cursed of him shall be cut off. Verse 35. I have seen the wicked in great power, and spreading himself like a green bay tree. Yet he passed away, and lo, he was not. Yea, I sought him, but he could not be found. Verse 38. But the transgressor shall be destroyed together. The end of the wicked shall be cut off. In verse 13, he talks about God laughing at the wicked. You know, I'm not sure, but I believe that the only time I've ever read about God laughing is in the judgment of the wicked, of the proud. But listen to Psalm 2 and verse 4. He that sitteth in the heavens shall laugh. The Lord shall have them in derision. Psalm 59 and verse 8. But thou, O Lord, shalt laugh at them. Thou shalt have all the heathen in derision. In verse 14 here, as Paul is talking about the wicked that have drawn out, as David is thinking about those who have drawn out the sword, he may have been thinking about the persecutions that he endured. When Saul tried to kill him, when Absalom took away the throne and tried to kill him as well. And you can read about all of that in 1 Samuel chapter 17 and 24 and 2 Samuel chapter 17 and chapter 28. In verse 16, he says, a little that a righteous man hath is better than the riches of many wicked. Proverbs 15:16 amplifies this. Better is little with the fear of the Lord than great treasure and trouble therewith. Have you ever noticed how trouble seems to follow riches? It really does. Proverbs 16 and verse 8. Better is a little with righteousness than great revenues without right. Verse 17 tells us that the wicked will be prevented from doing more mischief. So number 4 and finally, what about, and this is the best part, the preservation of the righteous. The preservation of the righteous. Look, if you would, at verse 3 beginning. Trust in the Lord and do good. So shalt thou dwell in the land, and verily thou shalt be fed. Delight thyself also in the Lord, and he shall give thee the desires of thine heart. Commit thy way unto the Lord. Trust also in him, and he shall bring it to pass. And he shall bring forth thy righteousness as the light, and thy judgment as the noonday. Rest in the Lord. And wait patiently for him. That sounds like Luke 18, doesn't it? Fret not thyself because of him who prospereth in his way, because of the man who bringeth wicked devices to pass. Look at verse 18. The Lord knoweth the days of the upright, and their inheritance shall be forever. They shall not be ashamed in the evil time, and in the days of famine they shall be satisfied. Look at verse 23. The steps of a good man are ordered by the Lord, and he delighteth in his way. Though he fall, he shall not be utterly cast down, for the Lord upholdeth him with his hand. I have been young, and now am old, yet have I not seen the righteous forsaken, nor has seen begging bread. He is ever merciful, and lendeth, and his seed is blessed. Depart from evil, and do good, and dwell evermore. For the Lord loveth judgment, and forsaketh not his saints. They are preserved forever, but the seed of the wicked shall be cut off. The righteous shall inherit the land and dwell therein forever. The mouth of the righteous speaketh wisdom, and his tongue talketh of judgment. The law of his God is in his heart. None of his steps shall slide. Verse 33. The Lord will not leave him in his hand nor condemn him when he is judged. Wait on the Lord and keep his way, and he shall exalt thee to inherit the land when the wicked are cut off. Thou shalt see it. Verse 39. But the salvation of the righteous is of the Lord. He is their strength in time of trouble. And the Lord shall help them and deliver them. He shall deliver them from the wicked and save them because they trusted in him. In verse 3, he's saying, remain where you are and be satisfied because of your knowledge of God's providential care and because God will bring justice to those who oppose you. and those who oppress you. In verse 7, he's saying there literally, do not complain. Fret not thyself because of him. Don't complain. He says, rest in the Lord. We live in a busy time. People are going right and left. We do things to rest. We go on vacation to rest, right? So we go on vacation to rest. We get back home, and then we've got to unload, and then we've got to wash and do all these other things, and we're exhausted. So, you know, what a rest. It was a change. It was nice. But we have holidays, and we love those, don't we? We love to have family get-togethers, except you ladies that have to do all the cooking. And so after all of the family is gone, house has to be cleaned up, dishes have to be cleaned up, exhausted from doing all the cooking, where's the rest? There are times that we need rest. It was a wise voice that told his disciples when Jesus said to them in Mark 6 and verse 31, come ye apart and rest. Come ye apart and rest. That is the gracious invitation of the Lord in Matthew 11. Come unto me, all ye that are heavy laden, and I will give you rest, spiritual rest. Back to our text in verse 18. He talks about their inheritance shall be forever. And we mentioned that just a moment ago. In the New Testament, we are told what that inheritance will be. 1 Peter 1 and verse 4, to an inheritance incorruptible and undefiled, and that fadeth not away, reserved in heaven for you. That's why Jesus told his disciples, I go to prepare a place for you, and if I go to prepare a place for you, I will come again and receive you unto myself, that where I am, there you may be also. Where was that going to be? It was in his Father's house. Where is it? That's heaven. In Matthew 5 and verse 12, Jesus said, rejoice and be exceeding glad, for great is your reward in heaven. Verse 19, if adversity comes, there will be no shame that is felt by the innocent. They will know that they are not being punished. They'll just simply know that they are being tried. What does the New Testament tell us about that? In James 1, beginning of verse 2, James said, my brethren, count it all joy when you fall into diverse temptations, knowing this, that the trying of your faith worketh patience. But let patience have her perfect work, being perfect and entire, wanting nothing. So what does James say? James says problems will come, but they will develop patience. So there is no need to feel guilty when we feel that problems come, that the rich are profiting. It's not that we're being punished, it's that we're being tried. Verse 22, verses 9 and 11, answer to that. Verse 23, God favors the man here, we are told, who seeks after righteousness. We talked about that this morning in Job. When Satan came to Job, the Lord asked him, hast thou considered my servant Job a perfect and an upright man, one that feareth God and escheweth evil? God said about Job, a perfect and an upright man, one that fears God and escheweth, which means to despise or to hate, evil. God favors people like that. Job was favored. And we say, well, how was he favored? He lost so much. He lost his children. He lost all his possessions. God knew that here was a man that Satan couldn't touch. Here was a man that Satan, well, he could touch him physically, he could touch him materially, but it was a man that Satan could not destroy. And God showed him great favor, and he restored him and even more. In Psalm 1, we talked about this afternoon at the nursing home, God favors people that seek righteousness. Sinners will not stand in the judgment, nor the unrighteous in the congregation, but the righteous, they will stand. They will prosper. They will be blessed. They will be saved. In verse 24, he talks about the difference between misfortune and absolute ruin. Though he fall, he shall not be utterly cast down, he says. Here is an example from the Old Testament in the person of David, since David is the author of this psalm. David had committed adultery, he had committed murder. Nathan the prophet has come to him. Nathan has convicted him of what he has done. David said unto Nathan, 2 Samuel 12, 13, I have sinned against the Lord. And Nathan said unto David, the Lord also hath put away thy sin, thou shalt not die. The difference here between misfortune and absolute ruin, the difference between punishment and destruction. Nathan had gone on to say, but that child that was born, because of the implication that that puts before the enemies of the Lord, that child is going to die. But David's life was going to be spared. In verse 25, he says something that's very interesting that has bothered a lot of people. He said, I have been young and now am old, yet have I not seen the righteous forsaken nor his seed begging bread. And someone says, well, you know, I've had family members that have had a really, really hard time. Had a really hard time even buying food. I want you to remember who wrote this. David wrote it. He said, this is my personal experience. This is what I have not seen. I want you to remember that David was living during the days of the monarchy, when there were laws in place that kept Jewish brethren from abusing one another. There was the law of the Jubilee. There was law of compassion, laws of compassion. Widows and orphans were to be cared for. They lived in a different environment at a different time. Remember the context of when it was written. But David is also saying, I know that God cares. And I know that God will care for me. In verse 27, we would compare that to Psalm 34, verse 14. Depart from evil and do good. Seek peace and pursue it. The eyes of the Lord are upon the righteous, and his ears are open to their cry. The face of the Lord is against them that do evil, to cut off the remembrance of them from the earth. A person may have a great reputation. A person may amass a lot of fortune, and a person may have a tremendous bank account. But if they are wicked, even though we feel that they are oppressing others and maybe oppressing us, God will cut off the remembrance of them from the earth, David said. The righteous cry, and the Lord heareth and delivereth them out of their troubles. The Lord is nigh unto them that are of a broken heart, and saveth such as be of a contrite spirit. And that's Psalm 34, again, verses 14 through 18. In verse 30, we think about what Jesus said in Matthew 12. A good man out of the good treasure of his heart bringeth forth good things. An evil man out of the evil treasure bringeth forth evil things. But I say unto you that every idle word that men shall speak, they shall give account thereof in the day of judgment. For by thy words thou shalt be justified, and by thy words thou shalt be condemned. In verse 31, where he says here, the law of God is in his heart, none of his steps shall slide. It's a cause and effect relationship. It's the same as Psalm 119:11 that says, thy word have I hid in my heart that I might not sin against thee. It's similar to many passages, many statements that are found in Psalm 119, verse 34. As the wicked sees or seeks occasion to slay the righteous will witness their fall with a great sense of relief. He said, when the wicked are cut off, thou shalt see it. If we've lived long enough, we have probably observed people that have been true troublemakers and truly wicked people that have bothered our lives, and then all of a sudden they die, they're gone. No one talks about them anymore. And it's a shock. Because suddenly this person who was part of the great drama on the stage of our life, that person is gone. We saw it. But now no one mentions them anymore. They're gone from the scene. So what is this psalm all about? This psalm of David is written to encourage and to sustain righteous people during the trials, with a special assurance of God's love, his awareness, and his special protection, so that whenever trouble threatens, we can know that God will, even if he is patient in so doing, that he will suddenly, like Jesus said in Luke 18, he will suddenly judge on their account. He will be their salvation. This world is not the end of anything. It is rather the beginning. And those who trust in the Lord will take his word for the rule in their life and seek by observing it, by following it, to always be pleasing to him. And when we do that, we will come to a point where we don't worry so much about what the wicked have or what they don't have. But multiple times David said, fret not about it. Don't worry about it. It's just material things. And God will judge the wicked. And he said, just wait, you'll see it. Just wait, you'll see it. I don't know how long it will take, but I do know that if the problems that we have, if we can be faithful through those problems, then we'll answer Jesus' question this way. He said, when the Son of Man cometh, shall he find faith on the earth? If we can be patient and not fret about what the wicked are doing to the world and to us, then we can say, yes, Lord, there will be faith on the earth because I trust you. And I know that you will save me. And I know that I can spend eternity in the glorious presence before thy throne. If you're here tonight and have never obeyed the gospel, why not take advantage of the greatest offer that has ever been made? And acting upon your faith, confessing your faith in Christ, repenting of sin and being buried with Christ in baptism, and then living that faithful life unto death, Revelation 2 and verse 10. Even when it looks like everything's going wrong, even when it looks like wickedness is winning, even when it looks like people are out to get you, put your trust in the Lord and be patient because things will change and you will see it. David said so. Let us be encouraged to be strong in our faith. If we can help you in any way, would you come as we stand and as we sing?